Welcome to Local Talk, the Friday edition on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, events, and places in central Iowa. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for the hour, with engineer Mike Murphy, our steady hand at the controls, and Mike Metz, co-host, keeper of the Prairie Winds Prairie. What's new on the prairie, Mike?
Well, the birds have felt our first little feelings, the northern winds of Canada. Season is changing, that's for sure.
Going to be 33 degrees tomorrow morning, I learned. Hey, there's some events this weekend that are coming up I'd like to announce. The High Trestle Hawk Watch, Saturday, that's tomorrow. That's west of Madrid from 10 to 4 p.m. Expert birders and KHOI contributors, including Iowa Audubon Doug Haar and Mike Havlik, Dallas County Conservation Board naturalist, Matt Wietrich, Carroll County Conservation Board, and it's going to include the Iowa Wildlife Diversity Program, the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, and the Boone County Conservation Board. And Bruce and Marlene Arisman with the Iowa Wildlife Center will be on hand to share their expert hawk identification skills. And the Iowa Wildlife Center will be hosting an open house at their facility. And that's at the Wildway area near the Ledger State Park. And that's Sunday from 1 to 5 p.m. And also, coming up, keep in mind next Tuesday, Sailing for a Nuclear-Free World and a Peaceful, Sustainable Future. That's October 11th, on Tuesday, 7 p.m., here at KHOI, the 622 Douglas.
And currently, it's 38 degrees with a high forecast today of 54. So the cooling autumn air is now upon us. Sunshine this weekend with 64 Saturday and back into the 70s on Sunday. And 70s forecast into next week. Our sunrise today will be at 7:19 a.m., and the sunset will be 6:47 p.m. And, Pat, there's a big moon tonight and a full moon on Sunday.
Ha-ha. Hey, later in the hour, we'll have Erin Malloy, and with her husband, Brian, donated land to the Iowa Nation over in Johnson County, so the Iowa people will have a place for the first time since 1838. And yet, first, let's welcome Dennis Hart with a news summary from this past week from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
Coronavirus cases continue to decline in Iowa. The new Ames High School swimming pool still closed. And where you can find great apple orchards or pumpkin patches or Halloween fun this autumn. All part of what made news in the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's begin with last Friday's paper, which reported that 2,091 new cases of the coronavirus had been confirmed in Iowa, a 28% decrease from the week earlier. And the number of people hospitalized with the virus in Iowa also went down to 179 people, compared to 219 the week before. 26 new deaths were reported from the virus in Iowa, bringing the total number of deaths from the coronavirus to 10,077 since the pandemic began 2.5 years ago. The Trib also reported that Iowa had finished its most recent budget year with a nearly $2 billion surplus. That's up from the $1.2 billion surplus the state had the previous year. And with that word came the news that the state's top corporate tax rate is now set to drop from 9.8% to 8.4% since the state took in more corporate tax revenue than expected. The announcement drew immediate applause from Republicans, who said it's proof their budgeting and recent moves to cut taxes are appropriate. Democrats were quick to criticize the news, saying it shows Republicans have been underinvesting in state services. They also said the state GOP has been passing tax cuts that favor the wealthy and corporations more than everyday Iowans. There was also a story that the Iowa State Patrol would put additional troopers on the roads in an effort to slow down speeders. The State Patrol has seen an unusually high number of drivers traveling more than 100 miles an hour. And the Trib reported that the Camelot Theater in Nevada is under new ownership. The Camelot Theater Foundation bought the building for $50,000 and has plans to restore the 94-year-old structure. The project plan includes a bistro and rooftop bar, as well as the continuation of theater and stage shows. Saturday's paper reported that the state of Iowa had joined five other Republican-led states in suing the Biden administration to stop its plan to forgive student debt loan for tens of millions of Americans. The suit accuses President Biden of overstepping his executive powers. It argues that the loan cancellation is not tailored to address the effects of the pandemic on federal student loan borrowers, as required by a 2003 federal law the administration is using as legal justification. Governor Reynolds signed on to the lawsuit on Iowa's behalf. There was also word the two Iowa men had each been sentenced to 25 years in federal prison for making and possessing child pornography. 40-year-old Jason Kinman of Council Bluffs and 39-year-old Jacob Bermel of Muscatine had each pleaded guilty to pornography charges. The paper also reported that some Iranian students and recent graduates of Iowa State University took part in a protest on the ISU campus seeking justice for a woman who had died in the custody of the Iranian police weeks ago. She was 22-year-old Masha Amini, whose death has prompted protests in Iran. And the Trib reported that art lovers in Ames would have a chance to see artists in their studios last weekend. The Ames Community Arts Council was set to hold its annual Artist Studio Tour on Saturday and Sunday. 18 artists from Ames and surrounding communities plan to open the doors of their studios to the public for the free, self-guided event. Sunday's paper reported that Ames is opening another new neighborhood park and preparing to buy land for a big new community park that will add recreation facilities for residents citywide. The new neighborhood park is at the former Edwards Elementary School property on the corner of Westwood Drive and Woodland Street in West Ames. When Edwards Elementary was torn down 5 years ago, the school district planned to sell the land for development. But the neighborhood asked the district to gift the land to the city to become a park, and the neighborhood agreed to raise $250,000 to help the district pay to demolish the school. Ames will now have 38 parks, covering more than 1,000 acres. And the city council has agreed to try to buy nearly 50 more acres of land in West Ames to create a destination park for the city. It would be about the same size as Moore Memorial Park. It's at 5658 Ontario Street and includes part of Clear Creek. If the landowners agree to close the deal, development of the park would still be several years away. The Trib also had a story on where to find apple orchards in central Iowa if you want to pick fruit this fall. Among the spots, the Berry Patch Farm in Nevada, Center Grove Orchard in Cambridge, and the Storybrook Orchard in Story City. There are others as well. You can find them listed in Sunday's Tribune. The Trib also had a front-page story on Sunday about one of the newest businesses in downtown Ames. It's the Cayley Boutique on Main Street. And, of course, the Trib had coverage of Saturday's football game between Iowa State University and the University of Kansas. Kansas won 14-11. Tuesday's paper reported on the three candidates competing to represent Iowa's 4th Congressional District, which includes Ames, Council Bluffs, and Sioux City in the northwest part of the state. Incumbent Republican Randy Feenstra is running against Democrat Ryan Melton and Liberty Caucus member Brian Jack Holder. Feenstra is seeking a second term, and he has a big money advantage over the other two candidates. There was also a story that nearly 2 years after a federal policy required the nation's hospitals to unveil the hidden costs of medical care, only a tiny fraction of Iowa facilities are in compliance. Only 6 of the state's 61 hospitals reviewed by researchers, 10%, have complied with the federal rule that is intended to bring more transparency to health care costs. Nationwide, about 16% of hospitals have complied with that rule. And the Trib reported on the variety of Halloween-themed events that will take place in Ames this month. The Ames Haunted Forest, which is one of the longest-running haunted attractions in Iowa, will return for its 22nd year. It will open tonight, Friday, and be open every Friday and Saturday night from 7 to at least 11 through the end of the month. It's at 1400 South 4th Street, across from Jack Trice Stadium. Also, a dog costume contest will be held at the Ames Main Street Farmers Market tomorrow morning, Saturday, from 10 to 11 o'clock. Ryman Gardens will hold its annual Spirits in the Garden celebration, featuring more than 1,000 hand-carved jack-o'-lanterns. It kicks off Friday night, October 21st, with a sneak peek from 7 to 9 o'clock. No candy or entertainment will be offered that night. And then on the 22nd and 23rd, visitors can see the pumpkins and snacks will be available. And trick-or-treating in the city of Ames will take place at various times in the next few weeks. In North Ames, Somerset businesses will hold trick-or-treat on October 26th. At the North Grand Mall, trick-or-treat will take place October 27th. And the city itself will have trick-or-treating Halloween night, Monday the 31st, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. If all this is too much to remember, and it might be, it's all in Tuesday's Tribune. Wednesday's Trib reported that the swimming pool at the new Ames High School had been inspected and was waiting for approval from state authorities to reopen. The Iowa Department of Public Health had forced the district to close the pool on September 14th, 3 weeks after the new high school opened, and after Ames had already hosted 2 girls' swim meets. The state said it had never received a construction permit, had not reviewed engineering plans, and that the pool had not been inspected or registered with the state. Iowa law requires the pool's owner or designated representative to submit an application for a construction permit with the state health department at least 15 days before the start of construction. The Trib also reported that more Iowa Democrats than ever are campaigning for legalized marijuana, citing economic opportunity and better regulation of the drug. And the Trib had a list of pumpkin patches and corn mazes around central Iowa. Among them, Center Grove Orchard in Cambridge, Deals Orchard in Jefferson, the Iowa Orchard in Granger, and more. The complete list in Wednesday's Tribune. Yesterday's Trib reported that a judge has sentenced Boone resident Sharon Collins to 4 years in prison, the maximum sentence, for two counts of child endangerment causing bodily injury. Collins and her husband at the time, Tommy Collins, were both arrested and charged last year. Tommy Collins was sentenced to 120 years in prison for five counts of sexual abuse involving young girls. The judge who sentenced Sharon Collins, who is 66 years old, described the Collins home as, in the judge's words, a house of horrors. The Trib also reported that an Iowa woman had sued one of the companies that wants to build a carbon capture pipeline across Iowa. Vicki Hultz blocked a surveyor from Navigator CO2 Ventures from entering her and her husband's 151-acre property in northwest Iowa. The company wants to determine the land's suitability as a possible route for its proposed pipeline. Navigator is seeking an injunction that would force Hultz and her husband to grant it access. Hultz has countersued on behalf of herself and her husband, seeking to stop Navigator from entering the couple's land. And her attorney has challenged the constitutionality of a state law that allows the developer to survey land before they've received regulators' approval to build the pipeline. And the Trib had word that Iowa Democrats who are reeling from years of electoral losses are working to rebuild a progressive infrastructure across the state. They've launched a donor group called the Alliance for Better Iowa, a research hub called the Heartland Research Project, a communications hub, and a nonprofit hub. The groups all operate as separate organizations. And that is your summary of the week's news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, taking off now for the weekend, but planning to come right back here to host Local Talk on Monday morning at 7, when my guests will be Ames Mayor John Hala, longtime KHOI voice Paul Wearson, and Maggie Westfold, who will have her Minutes with Maggie feature. I hope you'll be here for all of it, and I hope we'll all have a safe, happy, and healthy weekend.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Week in the News. And yes, I hope you have a safe, happy, and healthy weekend also. Last month, the Iowa Nation was bequeathed 7 acres overlooking the Iowa River in Johnson County. This is very relevant because in 1838, it was decided that it was time for Native residents of Iowa to go to an area in Kansas and Nebraska to live so European white settlers would gain access to the rich prairie lands of the territory of Iowa. It wasn't until 1845 that Meskwaki Nation families were told to go live with the Iowas and to allow Iowa Territory to become a state in 1846. And Aaron and Brian Malloy worked with Larry Gullett, Johnson County Conservation Board director, to secure the property for the Iowa Nation. And we had Larry Gullett on Local Talk last Tuesday. Well, it was September 27th, Tuesday. And he provided the framework of this property transfer. And today, we'd like to learn more about the landowners, Aaron and Brian Malloy. Welcome to Local Talk.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
It's our pleasure indeed. And so let's break this apart. Are you from Iowa?
Yeah, not originally. Both of us were born elsewhere, but we have both lived in Iowa for good portion of our lives.
My parents moved here in 1978. That's when they bought the
farm. Oh, that's when you bought the farm. And this is the farm that we're going to be talking about.
Correct.
And we've had extensive conversations with the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation concerning conservation easements, things that landowners can do for their properties to ensure that conservation practices are established into the future. You chose a little different strategy, and this involves a 90-acre parcel?
Yeah, we decided to work with the Johnson County Conservation Board on preserving the land. And we felt like for us, they were the best entity to help work and preserve a larger piece of property like what we had been working.
So basically, it was in two pieces, 83 acres for the Johnson County Conservation Board.
It started out as a 90-acre parcel, and then we, through conversation, we ended up breaking out a 7-acre circle for the Iowa tribe, and then the remaining land went to Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, who then facilitated the transfer to Johnson County.
Sure. So, and you mentioned a circular, 7 acres?
What was given to the Iowa tribe was a perfect circle, basically, about 600 feet in diameter, which accounted for about 7 acres of land. And it's right on the high point of our property, which overlooked the Iowa River. So it's got a beautiful view, and it's the high point of the property. It's a gorgeous spot.
Will this be open to the public? Will we be able to come in and appreciate what you've donated to the Iowa Nation?
Well, the Johnson County Conservation Area is open to the public, and the Iowa Nation is within that property. So it's kind of a circle within the public use land, if you will. And absolutely, it'll be open to the public. And they're not quite ready yet because they need to put in some public necessities like restrooms and parking, but they're getting ready. And I'm sure it'll be available within a year or two.
So it's a work in progress.
Absolutely.
Oh, this is such just a wonderful story to share. Where did this concept really come from? Had you thought about this for a number of years, or is this special spot? Did that land kind of talk to you?
Well, that area of land is where I would like to have my ashes spread. I personally think it's a very beautiful piece of property. But to be honest, the idea was brought to us from Larry Golett, and Lance Foster had mentioned to him a while ago, who's the vice chair for the Iowa tribe, had mentioned to him a while ago that they would love to have some land again back in Iowa. And so through conversations, Larry kind of recognized that we might be the people who could make that happen for them.
Yeah.
And so he approached us with the concept. And of course, we thought it was amazing, the interconnectedness of it all, and said, let's do it.
Let's do it. Well, let's talk about Larry Golett just for a little bit. Now, we have a long-term friendship. He used to work with the Dallas County Conservation Board and then the Jones County Conservation Board. So he knows Iowa, the ins and outs. And we initially met during the era of planting prairie back in the 90s. And so what's your impression of your director there in Johnson County Conservation Board, of Larry Golett?
Well, the only thing I could say is Larry's an amazing guy. He knows Iowa probably better than anybody we've ever met. He's just a real steward for conservation and doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Yes, we respect him immensely and completely trust him.
Yeah, you know, Iowa has a county conservation board system of 99 counties and 99 conservation boards. So there's always a front line. There's always a director that's in government but prevalent in each county. And quite frankly, of all the 99 county conservation board directors, I really put Larry Golett at the very sheer pinnacle because of his not only wise stewardship of the resources, but his cultural outreach that he works for. Just a tremendous guy. So I don't know if that came across when I talked to him on the radio a week and a half ago, but what a guy. You're so fortunate in Johnson County to have a County Conservation Board director and his staff, but he's really quite a bridge to cultural amenity such as this. And Lance Foster, noted artist and an author, and what a genuine individual Lance Foster is. So you kind of stepped into a team effort here that is nothing short of phenomenal.
Well, thank you. We are beyond excited at how it turned out.
And it's my understanding that this will be the first time that the Iowa people essentially will have property in what was the Iowa Territory of 1838, when they were, I guess they were forced to leave. I think they were probably asked, but where they are located in Kansas and Nebraska, considerably different than this beautiful Iowa land.
Yes, we agree. I mean, we came into this uneducated, if you will, and have learned so much through this process. Through Larry, through Lance, through our own education, and it's an interesting, sad story that we're actually excited to be a part of, if that makes sense.
Oh, I think so, very much so. And a term that comes up every now and then, it's like we're, do you feel like in this current generation that we're trying to make amends to the Native community, or are trying to address some of these essentially atrocities that occurred previously?
As I said earlier, for us, we came in a little bit uneducated, so it wasn't this mission to make amends per se. It was learning the history and the facts, and then saying, you know, this is something we can do. We can make a difference here. And so it was more through being uneducated, so amends is kind of not quite the right word, because it came on as we learned more.
But we definitely thought it was the right, it was a good opportunity to do the right thing.
Yeah, you're a man of few words, but I can tell that the things that that speak to your heart, you're going to follow through and have some long-term effects from being a man of few words. I like it. But you're kind of sharing your story as you're learning. See, it gives all of us an opportunity in Iowa to learn on what is appropriate at this time. Gee, did I even realize the Iowa Nation still existed? You know, just from a simple level, but also the complexity of sharing cultural concepts and things. Are there prairie species existing on the parcel currently? Let's learn a little bit more about the habitat there.
Well, it's a 7-acre circle primarily of tall grass prairie, but we do have some creamy gentian, some, you know, a lot of native blooming prairie plants, but primarily it is a tall grass prairie.
Oh, sure. Well, the gentian, now they're kind of a delightful little yellow flower that it puts out a lot of seed, and that seed will spread. They're really a good one. I love that. And there's a blue species of gentian and also a yellow. Do you ever see the blue or the bottle gentian?
No, I think ours is the creamy gentian.
Which is a white
flower. Yeah
the creamy one? Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, what better flower to welcome the Iowa Nation back to a bit of their homeland overlooking the Iowa River. Do you feel like that there might be other, that you might be the start of something that other landowners will start to consider? How do you see this going maybe 10 years from now or 20 years from now?
Well, we hope it's the start of something. I mean, if you take people like Larry and like-minded people, we hope that it is the start of something good for the people who were basically kicked out of the state 185 years ago.
Yeah,
we do think it is the beginning of future conversations more along this line. And, you know, we know just from our conversation with our friends and our family, it was striking how little any of us really knew. So we do think it hopefully is the beginning of more.
Uh-huh. Well, you've really touched our hearts this morning, and thank you for agreeing to be on Local Talk and sharing this. It's a very important story. Is there anything else, Aaron or Brian Malloy?
No, we're just thankful that we were able to participate in this with Larry and with Lance and the Conservation Board. And we've been changed as people because of it, and we're thankful for that.
Well, what a wonderful story. And thank you so much for sharing. You've really brought to the forefront things that we can take into the 21st century and become a better people because of things that you have initiated in Johnson County. Aaron and Brian Malloy, thank you so much for being on Local Talk.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Okay. That's Santana. We're still recognizing the Hispanic Heritage Month here at KHOI until October 15th. A little bit of soul sacrifice there from Woodstock, 1969 by Santana. What a great band. So we are now looking forward to learning more from the City of Ames. Hi, Susan Guiasta.
Morning.
How are you on this? It's 7:29 on a beautiful Friday morning.
Well, it was a bit brisk this morning, wasn't it?
Yeah, we have a changing season upon us. I see it might even be forecast down to 33 tomorrow morning. But then
I had to wear my mittens.
Well, that. But it's going to be in the 70s, 80s. The forecast looks pretty good, actually, for warming temperatures next week. At least autumn's going to linger just a bit longer here. But it's sure nice to welcome you once again to Local Talk. I'm Pat Schlarbaum, and co-host Mike Metz is here with engineer Mike Murphy also. And do you have any announcements for us, Susan?
I do have a couple announcements. You know, all week I've been coming here talking about the Ames Repair Cafe on Saturday, and I think I've been telling you the wrong time. It just occurred to me as I was sort of thinking about my weekend plans. The Ames Repair Cafe starts at 10. It starts at 10 a.m. When the library opens. I think I had said it had started earlier, so if you get there earlier, you'll simply be the first in line.
Yeah.
But it's at 10 a.m., and again, the whole concept of the Ames Repair Cafe is to, you know, avoid throwing away items that may still have usable life to them. It's to get them repaired. Repairing items is kind of a lost art. A lot of people don't know how to fix things, including sewing buttons, fixing zippers, patching your clothing. A lot of people don't know how to do that. We're kind of gotten used to, if something doesn't work, we toss it in the trash, we go buy a new one. And I think the Ames Repair Cafe really causes us to look at how we use items, repair them, get them, you know, working again, and just eliminate some of that waste, that unnecessary waste that we're throwing out.
Yeah. You know, what this brings to mind, my mom had a darning egg for darning socks. Boy, now there's an item that I wonder if we'll show up at the Ames Repair Cafe on Saturday morning.
Yeah, so Pat, when's the last time you sewed up a pair of socks?
You're right. I mean, yeah, like you say, fixing things, well, we just replace things now. But, boy, I love this. You know, this is what a wonderful topic for community radio to focus on what we can fix.
Right. And one of the things that I was thinking about when we talk about saving resources, repairing rather than replacing, is kind of, I think there's a bit of trepidation coming into the change of season about maybe what our heating and cooling bills are going to look like. Cooling bills, obviously, that time has gone, but now we're going into a new change of season where we're climate controlling our homes. And that's one of the reasons that I thought Joel Zook from Ames Electric Services could maybe offer some tips and talk about just what he's seen. He's relatively new here, and just reflections on his last couple of months on the job as the energy services coordinator.
Well, hello, Joel Zook. Great to have you on Local Talk.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you're kind of new to the staff. How's that been going for you?
Things are going well. I think I'm about 5 months in now.
So okay.
Getting to be there.
You've hit your stride then.
Yes.
Boy, and as Susan kind of set up, some trepidation, a lot of electric usage this year. We were quick to point out when, you know, how people could conserve or best maximize the effort to maybe save washing their clothes until after sunset and those type of suggestions. What are you bringing to us to consider today?
Yeah, well, a big thanks to everybody who helped us conserve over the summer. We did avoid hitting a new peak, although we were very, very close. But not worried about peaks as we head into winter, more just concerned about making sure that people stay warm and stay safe, be looking at, you know, tips to keep their house warm and comfortable. We do offer energy audits that we'll take a look at, you know, of course, your electric use, but your heating use as well, and give you tips to button up that house, keep it cool. Or keep it warm. Sorry. Change of the season.
Well, both. Yeah.
Keep it how you want to be. And those energy audits do include a blower door test. A blower door test is really cool if you've never seen one before. And it's really great to have one done on your own house. It tests how leaky or how tight your house is. And that can be really important information because if you've got a big leaky house, maybe you already know you have a big leaky house, but if you have one, it'll tell you where those leaks are, identifies those where those leakage areas are. And if you don't know, maybe you need to know whether you have a leaky house or not. And that air infiltration can be a big contributor to your winter heating bills. Making sure that things are sealed up is going to make your house warmer. It's going to make it more comfortable. It's going to make it cheaper to heat and cool.
And is this a service that's being offered? Would people contact your office and essentially have a team come to check out your house?
Well, yes. So you can contact me at my number. You can call me. There's an online sign up as well where you can get all your information online, and we send that to a contractor who's not a team come to your house, just one energy expert who does the energy audit for you and the blower door test. He's a great guy. His name is Ryan.
Well, and I might point out, I live in the country, but my house isn't a big old house, but it is old. And the things that I look for are around the windowsills, around the door jams. Typically, I'm sure they would encourage us to replace any cracked or windows that needed to be replaced. What other areas are kind of the big items for a homeowner to be aware of?
Well, you know, it's actually a really good point. You mentioned all the places that, you know, that you might think of first off of where the leaks are, because you're noticing them as you're sitting on the couch or wherever in front of those windows when it's on a cold day. But a lot of times houses can have hidden leaks, either in the basement or connected to the attic, that you might not ever notice are there until you do this blower door test that really shows you where things are coming in. And one of the reasons for that is that, especially those attic leaks, warm air is going to go up and out of your house. So it's much harder to notice where air is escaping from your house rather than where the cold air is coming in. So the blower door is just a big old fan. They put it in the front door of the house and suck a bunch of air into the house, and it comes in through all those cracks. So you can really feel it, and you can see it too, because they usually use an infrared camera to check those things out.
So there's a machine that's included also.
Yes, and this is a free service to Ames Electric customers.
Wonderful. Have you heard about LP gas prices or any projections then for heating costs for this winter that we should be sharing at this time?
Gosh, I haven't. I should be looking into to what LP prices are. That's an interesting thing. In my previous job, I did a lot of energy audits and covered a lot more rural areas, and I was a little bit more in tune to that.
I know
the natural gas prices are up, so I got to imagine the LP prices are tracking with them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Couldn't agree more. Well, this position, has there always been an electric services coordinator, or is this kind of a new position for Ames?
It's certainly been around for a long time. Kaylee Lane was here before me, and then Steve Wilson, which I'm sure many other people do remember, had this position. And I think that was a new position at the time that he joined.
So it was Kaylee Barrios Lane previously was our energy services coordinator. Yeah, I love to pronounce her name. And what an asset she brought to the Ames community.
No, you know what? I am still reaping some of the benefits of a lot of the really, really great work that she did here.
Mm-hmm.
It makes her work has made a lot of my job easier.
Mm-hmm.
So it's wonderful.
Do you have a lot of outreach with other departments in the city, or could you walk us through just what your daily activities are included, or what you get around to each week?
Yeah, well, it's a little bit of everything. I'm in charge of handling the rebates through our smart energy program. And I've got a couple interns here at the office that help me with that are students at ISU. If you remember our community solar project, the SunSmart program down by the airport, that's still going and needs some care from time to time. And if people are interested in signing up for more solar panels that they can have as a bill credit, proportionate to the output of that solar farm, I'm the one who handles those applications as well. Coordinating energy audits, and then got a lot of other projects here that we're wanting to do. And the two that I'm digging into most right now is looking at how can we get some more new solar for the city of Ames, and getting more electrical vehicle charging stations throughout town.
Okay, so you mentioned a couple smart energy rebates, and those would be found on the City of Ames website?
That's right. If you go to cityofames.org/smartenergy, that'll get you to the rebate page there, and they'll be all listed. We have moved to an online on rebate process, so you can fill everything out online. And, just as an overview of rebates, we give rebates on Energy Star appliances, so fridges, dishwashers, washer and dryers, dehumidifiers. We do a lot of air conditioner rebates. But we also have rebates for heat pumps, which is a good thing for the a heat pump is like an air conditioner, but it can provide heating and cooling. So it's a great way to provide heating and cooling to your house using clean electricity.
Uh-huh. I really admire the SunSmart area that you've established out by the airport. To allow people that, not everybody has roof space that might be conducive to solar panels. And the way you've made it a collective community project is really what I enjoy most about the Ames community, I think. It's quite progressive and very appropriate.
Yeah, it is a great project. And the other great thing about it is it really does give that flexibility to someone who might want to buy, it might not have money to invest in a full solar system for their house now. They can buy it a piece at a time. Mm-hmm. And it also gives that flexibility that if they move within Ames, they can take that to their new address. Or if they move out of the community, they can get a refund, a partial refund for the amount of time that's left in their contract, so to speak.
A lot of an inducement or a lot of encouragement to embrace the new energy services that your staff provide. Is there anything else? What are we overlooking, Mr. Zook?
Well, I want to thank everybody who came out for the Eco Fair. That was a fun event. Eco Fair, and I think that everyone is excited on staff here to have that event back out in the public after taking a break for 2 years. I enjoyed having it outside. I think we'll have a discussion about whether we go back to a normal inside spring schedule or if we really like that outside event happening in the fall.
So
either way, it'll continue to be a great event.
I was up kayaking and I missed it, but I heard great things about it. And to dovetail with the farmer's market and have a beautiful Saturday, it sounded like it was really a wonderful showcase of all the things that the Ames, City of Ames is providing services to the community. And I sure wish I could have enjoyed the electric vehicles.
That was a real highlight. I took a time off from my booth, manning the electric services booth. But I went to go over to take a look at those electric vehicles. And, yeah, they had 15 or 20 cars there. I think they had at least a dozen different models, including a Rivian pickup and a Ford F-150 Lightning. I think all the Tesla models were there. It was really cool to see all of those options all in one place. Some of those cars I had never seen before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what a great opportunity to learn about. And was there an electric bus there?
No. You know that SciRide has an electric bus on order, but
it hasn't arrived yet. I've heard about this.
Hasn't arrived yet. We wanted to have it there, but sure. I'm sure that we'll do some unveiling or something with them when the time comes that they've got it on the road.
Well, really looking forward to that. Well, Joel, thank you so much for being on Local Talk, and thanks for all you do for conservation for the City of Ames.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you, and thank you, Susan Guiazda, with the City of Ames. We've been enjoying Joel Zook, who is the Energy Services Coordinator. Have a good weekend. Whoopi Santana at Woodstock, 1969. Let's welcome ISU Extension Director Mary Wilkins. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Oh, so great to see your smiling face this morning.
Thank you. It's a great day for sure.
What's new in the world of ISU Extension that we'd like to learn about?
Sure. Well, this particular week is really exciting because it has been National 4-H Week. So that really has kind of been what we have been celebrating all week. We really started right away on Sunday, October 2nd, by hosting a new 4-H and Clover Kid Club. It was a great way to start the week and celebrate National 4-H Week. We invited anyone that wanted to learn about the club, and certainly there will be more opportunities to do that as well. We actually hosted an open house in September with the intent of being able to start this new 4-H club on October 2nd. So we had over 35 in attendance and really were able to give them a really exciting first-time experience to help share what 4-H is. So 4-H's are youth development program that comes from Iowa State University Extension and Outreach. And the mission of 4-H in general is for youth to be empowered through youth-adult partnerships and through research-based experiences.
Do other states have 4-H like is so prominent here in Iowa?
Yes. So 4-H is in every state. It comes out of every land-grant university.
Oh.
So for us, that is Iowa State.
Uh-huh.
So yes, 4-H is 4-H is everywhere, and it is well over 100 years old. I don't remember the exact numbers in terms of participants, but specifically for Story County, we have over 600 youth that participate in the 4-H and Clover Kid program. And certainly we welcome the opportunity to grow that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Our clubs are guided by volunteers. So without them, we don't have the 25 clubs that we have. So we provide training and resources to those volunteers and support them as they guide young people through that 4-H program year. The 4-H program year actually kind of follows the school calendar, is often how I like to describe it. For the 4-H year starts in September, much like the school year, and then comes to completion in August of the following year. So summer is an opportunity for some of those additional highlights and opportunities surrounding, it might be camps, county fair. I think of the Iowa 4-H conference for older students. And as students progress through their 4-H experiences, there's even opportunity for scholarships, state awards, and even national awards.
You mentioned a couple things there that I'm curious about. The land-grant universities. So help me out here. There was a Morrill Act in 1866 or somewhere back there, and these land-grant university or colleges were established. It sounds like the federal government had some inducement to establish Iowa State College at the time here in Iowa. I'm sure Iowa was very prominent in the land grant era because we had just hadn't been a state for very long, and it was probably time to start thinking about higher education. But then structuring that knowledge so it could be disseminated in the farming communities. So it sounds like ISU Extension and 4-H was a pretty big component in that vision back in the Morrill Act era of land-grant colleges.
Absolutely, yes. So when all of that was set up, it was the idea that every state has a opportunity where continued learning can evolve on a campus site, but also being able to share that information out into the communities.
Mm-hmm.
And so ISU Extension and Outreach is kind of that component. We're kind of the helpers, the communicators, if you will. We're able to help share that information from the Iowa State campus and share that out into all of our communities through programs, resources. Sometimes we're connecting people back to folks on campus for their expertise surrounding an area of knowledge as well. So the concept was that education is available to everyone, right? Mm-hmm. So from my role with youth outreach, certainly that component is focused on youth and those opportunities. But a lot of times we have programs where youth and families come together as well. And so they can have a shared learning experience. They might have a similar experience, same topic, but experiences at their level or their age group, especially for the younger students. But then they can share that back with their family. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we're learning from the youth as much as we're learning from our peers.
Yeah.
So it's a great opportunity to really share that information out to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly our goal is to serve all of Story County, and we're very proud to be able to do that.
Yeah. Well, some important concepts there. If it was necessary or important in the 19th century, goodness knows it's very appropriate and welcome in the 21st century. So it's really an ongoing process that you're sharing with all of us here in Story County.
Absolutely. You know, yeah. Knowledge always continues.
Yeah.
Learning always continues. It's part of all of us. And
yeah.
I often say that change is the only constant. And so we're always learning and adapting and, you know, making those best choices for ourselves with the resources and information that we have or that we seek out.
Mm-hmm.
So we're glad to be a location that people can contact for resources.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing this learning. Not to put you on the spot, but what are the 4-H's husbandry. What do the four H's stand for?
That is a great question. Thank you so much for asking. So often 4-H does have a pledge, and it does focus on four particular words, because in our 4-H clover, in our emblem, there is a H in each leaf of that clover. And so the four H's stand for head, heart, hands, and health. And so we take those components of ourselves and take that into as we grow our knowledge and master skills, whether it's surrounding a particular project topic or developing some skills that we'll use for the rest of our lives. So we incorporate those. There's also often a focus on sharing and working with our communities. So you may see 4-H'ers or clubs doing something within their community to give back as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, if it's good, and it is wonderful to have the head, heart, hands, and all connected by health. So the health and health through learning is a great way to think of it this morning. Well, we got a few minutes. Are there upcoming things on your calendar that we should highlight?
Sure. So we have some programs coming up. Often right now, several of them are with groups. So we're taking some programs out to others. Partnering is another component of what we do. So next week, for example, we'll be with the Boys and Girls Club in Ames. Focused on this month, we're kind of focused on a pumpkin theme as we visit groups. So they will be a group that we visit this next week. We actually are going to do a pumpkin program on October 22nd, too. I know that's a little bit further out, but that is a public event, free to families. It's going to be held out at the DeMoss Pumpkin Farm. And so our Ag and Natural Resource Coordinator, Catherine, is going to be implementing that program with one of our interns. So Catherine and Samuel are going to be putting that program together. It's going to be that afternoon. I don't have all of the details in front of me right now, but those details are available on our webpage and our Facebook page. And I believe they are taking registration. The event is free, but it is helpful to have an idea of how many plan to participate so they can be prepared with supplies for everyone as well.
And I think that website is extension@iastate.edu.
Yeah.
/store.
Yep. extension.iastate.edu/story. You are always welcome to give us a call as well at 515-337-1601.
Okay, and the DeMoss Pumpkin Farm, is that is there an address, or maybe I'll look that up on your website?
I don't have it in front of me, but I do believe they are over by Gilbert.
By Gilbert. Oh,
they're just a little west of Gilbert.
Just west of Gilbert. Sure, I know where the DeMoss Farm is on that pavement. Mm-hmm. About a mile and a half west of Gilbert. Uh-huh. Well, that sounds delightful. Is there any other harvest season activities to look forward to?
That is the one that I'm recalling right at the moment. Mm-hmm. We are getting some other opportunities and programs going as well. We certainly are happy to bring programs out. So if there is a request, we do our best to fulfill those as well, mm-hmm. Whether it's related to agriculture, whether it's related to nutrition, thinking of our Pick a Better Snack program, or even our My Plate program as a couple examples. Mm-hmm. And certainly family programs, too. We do have an Interact program coming up for families and their children that are in 3rd through 6th grade, too.
Well, great. Thank you so much for being on Local Talk. Mary Wilkins with ISU Extension. That website, once again, is extension@iastate.edu/story. Thanks so much, Mary.
Thank you. Enjoy your day.
Local Talk airs each weekday at 7 a.m. on 89.1 FM. KHOI Local Talk is a training workshop as well as a show. If you have an interest in joining the Local Talk team as a reporter, the welcome mat is out here at 622 Douglas, and you can come and join us, the Local Talk team, by calling 515-292-2878 or go to our website where we are streaming live at khoifm.org. Please remember to support this nonprofit station financially when you go to that website and find the yellow donate button.
KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and provide information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is community nonprofit media in the highest regard. At Community Radio, you will hear items and stories you're not going to hear anywhere else. Community Radio is very unique in that way. Events to announce this weekend is the High Trestle Hawk Watch Saturday. That's west of Madrid on the High Trestle Trail. It's from 2 to 4 p.m. Expert birders and KHOI contributors, including Iowa Audubon, Doug Haar with Iowa Audubon, Mike Hovlick, Matt Wietrich, Bruce and Marlene Arisman, the folks at the Boone County Conservation Board, and thank you to all the things that Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation provides, which is another outreach for this event. Bruce and Marlene Arisman are the directors of the Iowa Wildlife Center, and they are having an open house at their facility, Wildway, near Ledges State Park, and that is Sunday, 1 to 5. And also, Sailing for a Nuclear-Free World and Peaceful, Sustainable Future is going to be here at KHOI, October 11th, Tuesday, 7 p.m., here at 622 Douglas. Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your summary of the news, and thank you, Local Talk producer Lynn Carey. And thank you, Mike Murphy, for engineering and all that you do for community radio. And we'll look forward to You Name It Monday night at 9 p.m. rebroadcast. And thank you, co-host Mike Metz. Thanks to our guests, Aaron and Brian Malloy, Joel Zook, and Mary Wilkins with ISU Extension. I have been your host, Pat Schlarbaum.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. The other artist you heard this morning was Carlos Santana, in honor of Hispanic Heritage Month. And stay tuned for Adagio at 9 following Headline News and Democracy Now. Hope you have a great weekend. Enjoy all the birds and critters. And remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI Community Radio. And we will see you again on the radio.
You are listening to Community Radio, KHOI, Dory City, Ames.